This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On Monday of this week, the Unocal Corporation agreed to settle an important human rights case. 15 villagers from the country of Myanmar filed a lawsuit in 1996 that claimed that Unocal was liable for forced labor, rapes, and a murder allegedly committed by soldiers during the construction of a natural gas pipeline the company helped build in the country formerly known as Burma. The case is one of the first filed against a corporation under an obscure law that dates to 1789 and was originally intended to address piracy. The Alien Tort Claims Act gives federal courts jurisdiction over acts committed in foreign countries in violation of the law of nations. Human rights activists say this settlement is a landmark victory that will force corporations to change the way they do business, not just in Myanmar, but in many countries. Corporate lawyers warn not to read too much into this one case that they say is a misapplication of this law. Later in the program, the new hybrid holiday. Yes, it's Chrismica time, but first corporations and human rights. Should companies be held liable for human rights abuses in countries where they do business? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now to bring us up to date on the Unocal case is NPR's Carrie Kahn. She's joining us by this from the studios of NPR West in Los Angeles. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about this case. What was Unocal doing in Myanmar, and what were the human rights abuses allegedly committed there?
Well, it was the early 1990s that Unocal began building a natural gas pipeline there, and it was a huge project of $1.2 billion. It was near the border of Thailand, and thousands of acres of forest had to be cleared, and the human rights advocates have long alleged that during that clearing of the forest, the Myanmar military forced villagers to do the work. They were taken from their villages, they were beaten, they were living in horrible conditions, given little or no food, and no pay for the work. And actually, Neil, NPR's Daniel Zwerdling went to the region. He was near the Thai border at some refugee camps, and he talked to alleged victims of the abuse, and he heard stories and reported on them of murder and beatings and torture there. And Unocal has long denied they knew anything about the human rights abuses. They said they never sanctioned the actions of the military, but in federal court documents and in company memos obtained by NPR, there was evidence that they were at least warned of the abuses.
And this case is whether they should be liable for the abuses committed by the military in Myanmar. And again, this was not committed by anybody working for Unocal.
Right.
Okay.
And the human rights activists took on the case on behalf of these villagers, or the anonymous villagers. And the lawyers, like as you said in the introduction, they turned to this obscure 215-year-old statute that was actually used to prosecute pirates who had committed international crimes on the high seas. And the lawyer said that that statute could be applied to foreigners seeking redress in U.S. courts for abuses abroad. And there are, as you said, there are dozens of cases working their way through the courts, but the Unocal case was the first to actually get a court date set. And activists have been pursuing this case for nearly a decade, and they've been doing it on two fronts in California state court and on the federal in federal courts. A state judge did set a court date for next year, and then on Monday, a full panel of the Ninth District Court of Appeals was going to hear the case, and that's when the news of the settlement came out. And what actually gave the activists a leg up in this in the case was a recent Supreme Court ruling in June that upheld the use of this statute. And the Supreme Court wasn't really specific about whether a U.S. corporation could be sued through using the statute, but it did leave the door open enough. Mm-hmm. And it appears that Unocal didn't want to take its chances.
The Supreme Court case you refer to, the Alien Tort Claims Act, was used to by Holocaust victims to help recover accounts in Switzerland, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's been, it was a lot of activists in the U.S. use it when for specific torture victims that were tortured in another country, and that person who did the torture is in the United States, and so they bring that person to court in U.S. court. So that's it's usually an individual. It's not usually a corporation.
As you mentioned, there are dozens of other cases that are still working their way through the courts.
There are, and we don't know exactly how those cases will be resolved and how this will affect those cases. Activists say this is a the greatest thing that's happened, and they're thrilled about the settlement. But the question is whether more of these cases will be filed. And then corporations are saying that it's too soon to tell, and let's not get so excited about just this one case. Everything has its own individual facts, and we'll have to see if there's a flood of lawsuits. And actually, what the Supreme Court meant by their upholding of the statute, will it apply to corporations? We haven't yet seen that come to fruition yet.
And an important aspect of this particular case was that the case was not only making its way through federal courts, but through California state courts as well.
Right. And a state judge had actually set a court date, and that was going to happen early next year. That had gone on for a long time, too. And the judge had thrown out certain aspects of the case, but did set a date and say that Unocal must come forward and have the villagers have their day in court. And I don't think Unocal wanted to see villagers from Myanmar in Los Angeles state court. That could be quite a spectacle for the news agency. I don't think Unocal wanted to face that.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any details of what the settlement agreement will be?
No, there's absolutely none. They said all we heard on Monday was a one paragraph, a terse statement. Activists would not talk. They're under a gag order. They're still negotiating final terms of the settlement. They have until February to do that. But Unocal did say that it would provide funds for improving living conditions, health care, and education in the region where the pipeline was built. But they also did reaffirm their commitment to human rights, and they claim no wrongdoing in that statement.
Carrie Kahn, thanks very much.
Sure, thank you.
Carrie Kahn, a reporter for NPR, joined us from our bureau in Los Angeles, NPR West. With us now to talk more about the legal aspects of this case is Elliot Schrage, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and adjunct professor at Columbia University's Business and Law School. He's with us by phone from his office in San Francisco. Nice of you to be with us today.
Happy to be here.
How big do you think this Unocal settlement really is?
Well, you know, as your last set of questions really suggests, you know, it'll be very interesting to see what the actual terms of the settlement are, and I think to some extent observers will be looking very closely to see what the terms are and how that and whether, frankly, it impacts only Unocal's operations in Burma or more broadly Unocal's business practices around the world. But I think that the general point is undeniable that this is the first case that I'm aware of, at least, of an alien tort claims or an alien tort statute case against a private corporation having reached a resolution other than a dismissal in the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, it's a pretty big deal.
So, but a settlement, as important as it is, does not set a legal precedent, does it?
Well, it doesn't set a legal precedent, but actually, I think from the perspective of the human rights or activist community, their goals are twofold. One is, I'm sure, to advance legal accountability and have legal judgments rendered against corporations. But perhaps much more important than that, they really seek to change corporate practices. And for that purpose, having a settlement out there really does establish a precedent that these kinds of cases are legitimate cases, and that companies that ignore the statute, that ignore human rights issues in the course of their international operations, are at risk of problems down the road.
Well, ignoring human rights abuses, this case alleged that Unocal knew or should have known that these abuses were occurring along the route of this pipeline it was helping to build in Burma, the former Burma, now Myanmar. If you just did business in Myanmar, just sold soda pop or something like that, would you be liable in that case?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. Certainly the fears of the business community are that this kind of case opens the floodgates of litigation so that anyone who does business in a country that has human rights abuses could potentially be subject to litigation. And again, there I think the issues are twofold. One is that there's a concern, of course, of actual liability. But I think most people, and certainly most reasonable people, would say, well, of course not. You're not going to have that kind of liability. But the other concern is that companies have, and I think it is a legitimate concern, is that until the law is better defined, the risk of litigation and tremendous litigation expense, you know, can't be ignored. There recently was a case filed against a class action lawsuit against a number of multinational corporations that were doing business in South Africa during the apartheid regime. And those companies, essentially, were being sued for supporting apartheid by their business presence. Now, that case was kicked out. So, you know, your soda pop argument is right, that people shouldn't be held accountable for that. But at the same time, those companies did incur non-trivial expense and irritation and a hassle at having to deal with what ultimately proved to be a dismissed case of law.
We're talking about a case earlier this week in which the Unocal Corporation settled two lawsuits brought against it by human rights activists on behalf of 15 villagers from the country of Myanmar. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email address is totn@npr.org. And Alex is with us on the line from Miami.
Hi, Neil. I had a question. I wanted to know, why is it that an American company is being held liable for the actions or the atrocities of a foreign government or military? I mean, this seems to me to be a grave injustice, and I don't understand the reasoning.
Well, your position is not that different from that of the business community, but I think the concerns were, and I think it's something that you need to go to the details of the specific situation and the facts. The question here was whether the government of Myanmar or the military were essentially in partnership with the company in terms of its operations, so that Unocal, in the course of its business activities in Burma, really was working with the government, and the government was working with it, and in the course of that joint enterprise, Unocal had responsibilities for the actions of its government partner. There was some question of how complicit, whether Unocal was essentially aiding and abetting, or as the reporter indicated, was somehow complicit in these abuses, at the very least being aware of them and not acting to stop them.
Looking the other way. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's interesting. There was another partner in that oil on that natural gas pipeline venture, the French company Total. Is there any litigation underway in Europe?
There is. It's an excellent point. There are actually two cases that are taking place. One was brought in Belgium against Total, and my understanding is there's another action that's currently taking place in France. The question that these all raise is, and your caller, you know, correctly sort of suggests, is the United States necessarily the right place to bring these lawsuits? And more generally, are courts the right way to define the appropriate responsibilities of multinational corporations in the global economy? And that's also being worked out. And I think it's important for your listeners to understand that the legal accountability is only one aspect of a much broader movement to define the obligations of multinational corporations in their global operations and to impose some accountability for those actions.
Mm-hmm. Alex, thanks very much for the call. And the other question, these other lawsuits that are involved, that are following on, this Unocal case involve suits against companies involved in various projects in places like Nigeria, Indonesia, and I guess the big one out there is China, eventually.
You know, China is the 900-pound gorilla, and it seems inevitable that companies that do business in China, particularly companies that work very closely with the Chinese government or Chinese government entities, either the military forces or the military supported institutions, should be thinking long and hard about how they're monitoring their business relationship and how they make sure that they're not going to get caught up in being held accountable for abuses that their business partners might be committing.
We're talking about multinational corporations, human rights, and the law. If you'd like to join us again, our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We'll take more of your calls when we come back from a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about corporations doing business abroad and their responsibility for human rights violations in the countries in which they do business. Of course, you're invited to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Elliot Schrage, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. And joining us now is Arvind Ganeshan, the director of the Business and Human Rights Program at Human Rights Watch. And he's with us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. And it's good to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
How important do you think this case is?
I think it could be a very important precedent, both because increasingly we feel that the Alien Tort Claims Act may be one useful tool in ensuring that companies do the right thing abroad, but also, depending on the terms of the settlement, it might send an important message to the business community as a whole as to what the limits are on conduct and what is and isn't acceptable or unacceptable conduct. So it could be potentially very important in moving things forward.
Because this is a settlement, and normally gag orders are imposed by both sides in settlements, do you expect to find out the details here?
I think with this case and other cases, eventually details will come out. It's difficult to imagine in human rights cases how everything could be kept confidential for very long. So I suspect that a fair amount of information will come out, particularly what's happening on the ground in response to this. But it is one step. As you mentioned before, there's still a lack of clarity that won't be cleared up until a real legal precedent is set some point down the road.
Until somebody takes one of these cases all the way to the Supreme Court.
Right, right.
And given that, is the courts, and Elliot Schrage mentioned this earlier, are the courts the proper place to settle these questions of corporate responsibility?
Well, it's one place. I think, I mean, in a globalized world, there are a number of different avenues in which you can have institutions either promoting or ensuring corporate responsibility. One is companies themselves. Another is the press or non-governmental organizations that report and investigate on these issues. A third are financiers, like banks, that put out conditions to companies when they lend money to them to do projects abroad. And then another element is governments, and finally the courts. So there's always going to be some combination of these things, of which courts are important. They're not the only institution out there that should do stuff, but they're a critical one that's starting to emerge as an institution that's beginning to examine these issues.
Let's get another listener in. This is Susan, who's with us from Arlington, Virginia.
Hi there.
Hi.
You know, since business represents us, its employees, its investors overseas, I wonder if either of the guests would like to comment on whether or not they think the business community, in response to this, will ease their concerns about the norms on human rights, which I know neither Elliot nor Arvind had a chance to talk about, but perhaps they could talk about that as a mode. And best wishes to all your listeners.
Okay, thanks for the best wishes. When you say ease their concerns, I mean lower standards?
Well,
delineate standards.
Oh, delineate. Okay, that's what I just wanted to get clarification
so that,
there.
So that, you know, because the business community, on one hand, you know, business likes stability. And so having a set of uniform standards, you know, that's something that will have to evolve over time, but as markets change, but, you know, the norms are a good first step, which some European companies have agreed to road test.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I work on, so I know about it, too. But let's hear what your guests have to say.
Elliot, why don't you go first?
Well, it's a really good point. You know, the most important value of the litigation of the Alien Tort Statute or the Alien Tort Claims Act, whatever we want to call it, most important value is the fact that it really shakes up the status quo. The status quo used to be that international business operations in developing countries that had poor systems of accountability, you know, the company's activities really went relatively unchecked. There wasn't much accountability for what they were doing. And the legal challenges and the settlement reinforced by the settlement really changes that. It now says to companies, you don't really know what the rules of the game are, and you can't be sure that you're going to be, you know, you're not going to be held accountable for the problems that you create or that are created by your business partners, by the governments that you may be working with. And that, I think, creates a real incentive for companies to change the status quo. Now, the problem has been that the change so far in the status quo has been, they say, well, we hate these lawsuits. We want to get these lawsuits stopped. But I think, as Susan pointed out, the more enlightened businesses or really leadership companies are saying, well, wait a second. It is inevitable that we're going to be held to higher standards. Maybe we need to roll up our sleeves and help define what those standards should be so that we have certainty in our business operations and we don't have to be constantly looking over our shoulders or guessing what the appropriate standards of conduct should be. And these UN norms, these draft UN Norms of Business Conduct, which are just a document that the UN came out with about a year ago, you know, they offer one path for developing a set of more coherent standards.
Or, Arvind Ganeshan, might it discourage companies from doing business in places like Myanmar, where, in fact, they might be beneficial?
No, I don't think it'll discourage companies from doing business. I actually think what will happen is you'll have enlightened and progressive companies moving forward with stronger standards, and you'll always have an element of companies that feel they can get by with the either no standards or the lowest possible standard. But the reality is, in today's world, companies have to go all over the place to do business. And there's no evidence in the last 10 years or so, when these lawsuits first started, that any company has been impeded from operating anywhere abroad.
Well, no one had lost any of these suits before
either. But the business community or parts of the business community have argued that this has been an impediment to doing business abroad, or this is a consideration in going abroad, and it really hasn't been.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that's less of a consideration than the fact that the world is starting to decide that companies do have certain minimum obligations. And obviously the UN norms or the draft norms are a reflection of that, but it's also exhibited in other fora and in other standards that have been worked on by governments, by companies, by nonprofits and the like. So I think now we're at a point, whether it's lawsuits or other means, we're at a point where companies just have to sit back and say, you know, this is a boat that's already left the harbor and it's moving forward, and the real question is, what are the standards and how do we comply, rather than looking at this as something to stop, because it's obvious now that it's not going to stop. Mm-hmm. And it's also not going to affect whether or not companies go abroad, and it's likely that the companies that get ahead of this will be more successful as they move abroad and as they do other forms of business.
Neil, if I could, I actually would disagree on one aspect of what Arvind said. You know, I absolutely think that the business communities has been a little bit of crying Chicken Little about the impact of these lawsuits. But I think it's partly because they haven't gotten as far along as cases like the Unocal case have. I do think that there is a real danger that over time what you will see is that in certain kinds of countries, responsible businesses won't be able to do business there, and that irresponsible businesses will move in. And you've seen that already in a country like Sudan, where a company was Fort Talisman was sued for having, you know, much the same kind of concerns, its relationship with the military in Sudan, and Talisman sold its stake. And while that's all very well and good that Talisman left, the result was that another company went in, and the company that went in, I believe it's an Indian company. It's an Indian company that is much less likely to be sensitive to or subject to these pressures, legal or otherwise. So the result is that legal pressure can only get you so far, and beyond that, for the real outliers, that is, for companies who really don't care or choose not to follow human rights standards or best practices in human rights in their operations, we're going to have to find other avenues to hold those companies accountable.
Yeah, I think, though, that's a little bit of a dangerous argument, because if a company says, well, we're a progressively minded company, so it's better for us to commit bad acts abroad versus a company that's not progressively minded who may commit the same bad acts, that's not really justified. It's kind of saying, a little bit like saying that, you know, this guy should be allowed to rob me because he's inherently a nicer guy. But at the end of the day, it's still a robbery.
Well, I agree completely. My point isn't that Talisman should have stayed in.
What that argues for more is a legal standard that applies to all companies. And lawsuits
lawsuits.
I mean, that requires international law and international standards. On the other hand, a better way to look at it is look at business or companies 100 years ago, before there were antitrust laws or before there were, you know, laws regarding food or drugs or things like that. And although we're having problems with those today, you can argue that business today is far more regulated on a number of levels than it ever was 100 years ago, and it's also far more profitable. So the one thing about business is that it does adapt and it does manage to succeed in any environment. So I do think there's, like Elliot said, there is a chicken little attitude towards some businesses, and I think history doesn't show that attitude actually plays itself out.
Arvind Ganeshan, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Arvind Ganeshan is Director of Business and Human Rights Program at Human Rights Watch, and he joined us from his office here in Washington, D.C. We'll get a view now from business. Tom Niles, the President of United States Council for International Business, joins us by phone from his office in New York. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Do you think Corporations like Unocal should be held liable for human rights abuses that occur in, when they're involved in their businesses overseas.
Well, I personally don't think that companies should be held responsible for actions by governments. And that is essentially what's being done in the case of Unocal, and not just in that case, where companies are the surrogates in case of these court actions that have been launched in the United States under the Alien Tort Statute for governments. Unocal, in Unocal's case, it's the government of Myanmar. In the case of ExxonMobil, it's the government of Indonesia. In the case of the 80-odd companies that were being sued here in New York, it was the government, the apartheid government of South Africa. You can't sue the government, so you sue the companies, which have the misfortune or the fact of being in a country where there may well be serious human rights abuses.
According to the court documents, in any case, at least from what I've read, the Unocal was aware that this stuff was going on. What should they have done?
Well, take a look at the status or the company involved in Myanmar. Unocal is a 28% owner of a company that is 68% owned by Total Finalf, or Total as it's now called, and 5% by the government of Myanmar. The operator of the gas pipeline project happened to be Total. Now, you ask, what is the minority partner in a foreign company doing business in a country which unfortunately has serious human rights problems? Nobody denies that. What is it supposed to do? And by the way, Unocal and Total, for that matter, were in the country, Burma, now called Myanmar, for some time before the current regime took over, the military regime, which overthrew the results of the, I think, 1988 democratic election. You have a problem in many developing countries where you invest, a company invests, invests quite a bit of money, and the governance situation worsens considerably. What do you do? I mean, you have quite a bit of your capital invested in that country.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Seth. Seth's calling from Conway, Arkansas.
I just wanted to make the point that I think that since businesses have been responsible for making sure that there is a discrimination going on in their hiring practices since the Civil Rights Act, I think they should be responsible for knowing what goes on in all their companies and their subsidiary companies in other countries, making sure there isn't human rights abuses going on there. Like what was going on in with Coca-Cola in Colombia, the assassination of union leaders.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about Coca-Cola in Colombia. The country, Colombia, happens to be going through a very, very complicated, bloody, essentially civil war in which various groups are contesting with each other for political supremacy or control of the drug traffic or whatever it is. You've had murders of business people, church leaders, government officials, labor leaders. In that circumstance, companies are caught in the middle. The specific case in Colombia that's now in the Southern District of Florida it's been dismissed against Coca-Cola, didn't even involve the Coca-Cola company. It involved a bottler which had a license from Coca-Cola to do business in Colombia.
I thought Coke was the parent company of that, and that they did know what was going on. That there was a letter sent from the union Sinaltrinol to Coca-Cola about their fears that they were about to be assassinated by paramilitaries hired by the local plant manager, and Coca-Cola did nothing.
Well, what is Coca-Cola supposed to do? You get a letter. I don't know about this letter, but if you're in Atlanta and you get a letter from a company or from a person in a country, which, as I said, is going through essentially a civil war and has been for a good many years, are you supposed to withdraw? Are you supposed to send troops in? What do you do in a case like that? What is Unocal supposed to do in Myanmar where the government employs forced labor? Nobody questions that. The International Labor Organization has taken unique actions in the case of Myanmar, invoking sanctions against the country because of forced labor.
Seth, thank you very much for the call. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Tom Niles, I wanted to get you and also Elliot Schrag back into the conversation.
Yeah.
Do you see this, or do companies see this as a precedent that could be applied in, you know, Indonesia, Nigeria, conceivably Saudi Arabia, conceivably China?
What is this?
The application of this law in terms of corporations and doing business.
Well, let's hold on just a second in terms of what has actually happened. The attorneys for Unocal and the plaintiffs have advised the court that settlement negotiations are underway, and they received a two-month extension in the hearing that was scheduled for the 13th of December. We'll see. There may well be a settlement in this case, and then let's take a look and see what the terms of the settlement are. Each one of these cases, and there are probably, I can count them all up, there are probably 25 or 30 of them that have been filed around the country. Each one is different, the circumstances are different, and I dare say that reaction to whatever might happen in the Unocal case will be different.
Okay.
I want to go back, if it's all right, Neil. I think Tom raises exactly the right question, and that is, what do you expect these companies to do? And I think, frankly, that's what the process of these legal challenges is trying to determine. The one answer that is unambiguously clear as a result of the Unocal settlement, and indeed even the Supreme Court decision, is nothing is not a response, is not an adequate answer. What do you do when you hear reports or see evidence that your company is involved in working with military that are suppressing rights or conscripting forced labor or committing torture on people who are, you know, working on a project for which you are the direct beneficiary? Doing nothing, turning the other way, is not the answer.
Well, but Elliot, hold on. There's nothing in the SOSA decision.
And you have 30 seconds, Tom. 30 seconds, please. Go ahead, please.
With all respect, there's absolutely nothing in the SOSA decision that relates to anything having to do with the Unocal case, except the fact that the Alien Tort Statute is a grant of jurisdiction and not a cause of action. And that unless the claim or the charges raised to the standard of the three crimes against international law of 1789, the statute doesn't apply. And we would argue that it doesn't apply in the case of Unocal.
Well, we'll have to see what the settlement is. Tom Niles,
we'll see.
Thank you very much for being with us today.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Tom Niles, President of the United States Council for International Business, with us by phone from New York. Elliot Schrag, thank you very much for joining us today. Elliot Schrag, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and a professor at the Columbia University Business and Law School, and he joined us by phone from San Francisco. When we come back from a short break, we'll talk with Josh Schwartz, the creator and executive producer of the Fox TV show The OC, about a holiday phenomenon. His show is broadening Chrismica. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.